Hi, this is Chris Impellitteri of the band Impellitteri, and you are listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalheads, Scott Thompson here, welcoming you to another week of that which we call Focus on Metal. Can you believe it? At the end of last week's show, I did say that we were going to be talking to Chris Impellitteri and Rob Rock this week. And amazingly, between last week and this week, plans didn't change for once. So this week, we're going to be having a talk with Chris Impellitteri about the brand new album Venom and what's going on with the band Impellitteri. And then we're going to talk to Rob Rock about the exact same stuff. But of course, each one of these guys kind of has a different viewpoint. And how often do we get to do this, even in a single show? Pretty much never. So that is what is on tap for the show this week. And before we dive into anything else, I've got to throw my little commercial out for my friend Bob Nalbandian, just to remind you that Inside LA Metal, Pioneers of LA Metal, the first part of Bob's trilogy, is now available on DVD for you to buy, get into your hot little hands. And obviously, I don't know everywhere that it's available, but I do know it's available to Amazon. You can go check that out. Look up Inside LA Metal, find that for yourself. It is a great film. They divided it up now into two separate DVDs, which is also very cool because, you know, the original one that I got way back in the fall, it's like 3 hours of stuff. I love sitting down and watching 3 hours of solid metal, but I guess they decided it'd be better to split it into two and add a bunch of extra stuff to each DVD. So that's what they did. And that now, that volume one is available, like I said, up at Amazon. And you could check out wherever else you get your DVDs as well. They probably have it there too. And of course, Bob is working very hard on part two of this whole trilogy that he's doing on LA Metal. And that is the LA scene from 82 to 86. And I know as soon as that thing is even close to being done, we'll be hearing from Bob right here on Focus on Metal. All right, so busy show this week. Let's get right to it. Started off with Track of the Week. Track of the Week this week comes courtesy of our friends over at Frontiers, and it is the brand new one from Kiske Somerville. The name of the release is called City of Heroes, and the last time they put something out was back in 2010. I know that one got a lot of good reviews, so this latest one debuted in the EU on April 17th and in the US on April 21st. And it also comes in a deluxe CD DVD version. And the bonus DVD has a couple of video clips as well as a documentary little making of thing. So a really interesting album going on here. Of course, leading backing vocals are done by Michael Kiske and Amanda Somerville. Guitars and keyboards are from Magnus Carlsen. You remember we've had Magnus on the show before. Great guy to talk to. Pretty damn awesome guitar player. And he is doing all the guitars on this. And the bass and backing vocals is from our buddy Matt Sinner, who we've also had on the show. We're a big fan of all the stuff that Matt Sinner does here on Focus on Metal, between Sinner and Primal Fear and all kinds of other good stuff he gets involved in. And those guys did the lion's share of the songwriting for this one as well. And on drums is kind of a relative newcomer, but she is definitely making waves in the metal drumming scene. And that is Veronica Lukasova. And I hope I pronounced that correctly. If you look at her resume, she has worked with a ton of people. And she currently has a band together called Dr. Victor. But if you look at her resume of people that she has worked together, it is pretty damn impressive for a 22-year-old metal drummer. And if you want to see her in action, you can go up onto YouTube and look up Veronica Lukasova, and that's Veronica with a K, and you'll see a bunch of different videos of her doing covers of different songs on drums, and that'll give you a little bit of a taste of what this girl is capable of. So I know one of the things I like about this album is the fact that it is that whole Magnus Carlsen, Matt Sinner songwriting thing, and then with just totally different voices on in front of all of it, just kind of makes it a cool thing for me. And then the combination of, you know, Amanda Somerville coming out of the U.S., really huge on the European scene, not really well known here in the U.S. at all. And then, of course, Michael Kiske, who, I mean, the guy's a legend. Come on, came out of Halloween, has done all kinds of stuff as well. So you combine all of that, right? And it's one hell of a potent combination. So for Track of the Week this week, from our friends over at Frontiers Records. It's Kiske Somerville from their brand new one, City of Heroes. And this is the title track, City of Heroes. Metalheads, kick back, relax, raise the horns, and stay tuned for another original Focus on Metal, Metal Side Chat, with your host, Scott Thompson. All right, guys, I have got a killer guitarist on the line for us today, the one and only Chris Impellitteri of, as you heard, the band Impellitteri. How are we doing today, Chris?
I'm doing very well, Scott. Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. And of course, Chris has just put out an awesome brand new release. It's called Venom. Hits the European market on April 17th and here in the U.S. on April 21st. Tell you, killer, killer release. I just really love this one.
You know, thank you. I got to be honest, I'm actually getting nervous because, you know, I'm not used to that. I mean, we've been doing media, we're just starting the press stuff. Actually, we started yesterday. And, you know, whether it's critics or you know, guys like you, we've been getting insanely amazing response on this record. It's a bit frightening because we're going, shit, how are we going to live up to this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those records where I don't ever want to sound arrogant or egotistical. So please forgive me if I go anywhere near that area. But this is one of those records where it just everything came together as if there was a higher power just driving us, you know? I mean, by the time we got done with a record, we all looked at each other and we're just dumbfounded. We're like, my God, did we actually do this? You know? And then we started playing it for people. You know, at first, the labels, right? And we brought it to the labels in Europe because we decided we were going to release again. Every label freaked out, said, my God, who did this record? How'd you do this? Blah, blah, blah. We want this. Virtually everybody offered us a record deal. And it was crazy. And we were like, well, you know, look, it's the band. We're just being honest, but we did have a major goal on this record. And whatever, you know, whatever happened, time and chance, you know, the band, the chemistry of the band, you know, playing this live, recording this live in a studio, you know, worked our ass off on this music. It just came together all the way down to mixing and mastering what you hear now. And people, I mean, I've literally heard guys this morning, you know, some critics that are pretty tough to please. They were like, dude, we think you may have, they didn't say dude. They said, but. They said Impellitteri, they honestly think we may have made the best rock record of 2015. And I'm like, well, dude, slow down. I don't know about that. But, you know, I mean, when you hear stuff like that, you're like, whoa, that's amazing. Thank you.
What I like about it, too, is it really does have something for everybody. You know, I mean, the title track kicks off and you know it's an Impella Terry record right there. But then you've got stuff like Face the Enemy that's got more of a slow grinding groove to it, and Holding On, it's a little bit more of a, I don't know, it's just got this other cool tone to it that's in there. I can't figure out how you do it yet, but it seems like it's got something for everybody in this album. And I think that's maybe that's part of what people are liking about it.
You know, you have great ears, by the way. I mean, seriously, if you caught on to that, that's exactly what this is. There was a goal when we made this record, and I'll tell you, first of all, too, you have to understand, I started this band, in all honesty, I probably started the concept of this band, Impella Terry, when I was 15 years old, right? And we did our very first Impella Terry Black EP, and yes, it was called the Black EP long before Metallica had the Black Album.
Right.
And it had songs for people that don't know us. You can simply go on YouTube and just type in songs, Lost in the Rain, Burning, Playing with Fire. And that was our first record. It was like Maiden on steroids, right?
Yeah.
And had all the shredding, the screaming that we've become known for. So we were part of that music scene, late 80s. We were much younger than most of the bands, but either way, we were part of it, right? More of the thrashier kind of style.
Right.
And then we go through the 90s, and we got huge, I don't know why, but we got really big, massively popular in Japan and some parts of Europe. So we go into those markets, and we survive that. And meanwhile, remember, music's changing. You've gone from, you know, 80s music where you had, you know, anything from Van Halen, Motley Crue, Metallica, Ozzy, whatever, into Pearl Jam, Nirvana. For the metal stuff, you had Pantera, thank God. And, you know, you still had Metallica evolving, but they were experimenting.
Right.
You had, you know, different things, White Zombie. And then you had the rap, rock, metal movement, right? And then you go into the 2000 thing, and you start thankfully getting some of the Norwegian bands coming out of there, you know, some of the In Flames bands like that, great metal.
Yeah.
And all of this time, we're still making records, and we're touring, we're playing very large venues in Japan and doing some places in Europe. And it was just great. And part of that, remember, because we're being influenced, we're living in those times. Mm. So when we get to Venom, we had a goal of basically, you know, the goal was, first of all, no matter what the song sounds like, if it's a great song and it's a great performance, it makes a record. It doesn't matter if it sounds like it could have been on our first record or if it sounds like something from today.
Right.
It makes it. There's going to be no holds bar. If someone's going to say, oh, you sound like that's 1987, so be it. Great, because there was some great metal in that era.
Yep.
And if it sounds like today, like Venom to me sounds like it was done by a brand new band today in 2015. It's got that but it's very Impellitteri. It's high energy. It's just from start to finish. It's just, for me, it's fun. Very high energy, right? So, you know, that's basically why the record has so many different tones. It feels like when I listen to this record, and I've heard this from everybody else, it feels like we're taking you on a journey. We're going to go on a journey through the best times in metal all the way till today. And you're going to go on a fun time journey. Originally, we thought about calling the record Time Machine because we wanted to take you through. If you listen to Venom, right? Sounds right. Like very 2015 aggressive new metal band. But then listen to a song like We Own the Night. Dude, to me, that sounds like we ripped off Whitesnake with John Sykes and David Coverdale. It sounds like it could have been on the Still of the Night record.
Yeah.
To me, it sounds like that. It's not a ripoff. It's an original riff. It's very Impellitteri, but it has that vibe. It totally could be on that record. You know, it might sound a little bigger, a little bit more technical, a little bit more produced, but it has that feeling. Empire of Lies reminds me of, dude, if Ozzy Osbourne still had Randy Rhoads and were brand new today, you know, they're back to being young, if they did a new record, right? It sounds like Empire of Lies would have been Crazy Train, if sure. That makes sense. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, oh no, you can definitely hear all kinds of elements. Like I know when I heard, the first time I heard We Only Night, I thought, wow, that could have come right off of one of Rob Rock's own albums. And I think I also hear a lot of influences from the guys you have in the band. Like, especially I can hear a lot of what John brought coming into this band. It's just the drumming is more in your face. A lot of it's a lot more powerful. It's like, wow, I think everyone's personality is in here too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, John has been playing in a band with me for years as the side project Animetal USA. Mm. It's a side thing I do with Rudy Sarzo. Originally, the first drummer was Scott Travis, who's in Judas Priest. And, you know, we brought John into it. You know, we tried out a million drummers after Scott went back to do the Priest tour. And, you know, he was the one guy that was like a machine. Right. You know, and I've always had a drummer named Glenn Sobel, who's been very much part of Impellitteri for years.
Right. Didn't he do the last album?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, he did the last six or seven albums and tours. Mm. And, you know, Glenn's been my drummer, my main guy. But unfortunately, you know, Alice Cooper brought him out on tour and he had committed. He signed contracts, whatever. And then all of a sudden, Alice Cooper decided to go on and do the Motley Crue farewell tour.
Right.
So I called Glenn. I said, Glenn, we're getting ready to do the next Impellitteri record. You ready? He goes, dude, he goes, I can't get out of the Alice thing, you know? So basically, I had to find someone quickly. Now, James, the bass player, myself, and Rob really are the band. Mm-hmm. And so I said, John, I said, look, I said, Glenn can't do this. I said, you know, do you want to come down? Well, I'll talk to the band guys. I'll, you know, basically give you kind of like the audition where we'll look to see if you can cut this stuff, you know? And John was in great shape. He had just been filling in for Charlie Benante. He was playing drums for Anthrax.
Yeah.
Like some of the shows Charlie couldn't do. And at the same time, you know, John at one time had been in Slayer.
Right.
And so Slayer had a falling out with a great Dave Lombardo, who's another great drummer. And they called John and said, John, you know, we're going to be doing some festivals in Europe and we know you're doing Anthrax. Can you do us too? And he's like, Jesus, two of these kind of bands back to back. So basically he was in great shape from playing with those bands. So when I brought him in, I said, look, we're going to do this record. We're going to be a live band. You got to rehearse. We're going to work our asses off before we even get to the studio to do it as a real band. Mm. And so he committed. He's like, absolutely. And he had some Australian band he had made some commitment to do their record, you know?
Yeah.
So he was doing a side project for them. And I said, look, either way, if you do this and we have touring, this has got to be your commitment. He's like, absolutely, you know? So we brought him in and basically had this tremendous energy. It was like fresh blood, you know?
Right.
Just high energy. And it gave the band a kick in the ass. And Glenn still could have done it. I mean, Glenn is amazing and he has that energy as well. But something happened. It just... whatever that magic that happens for bands, it happened to us. And so, you know, it just, you can hear it.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's like I said, I mean, the whole thing is just, it's absolutely amazing to listen to. You know, some people, you know, they know you and they just think of you as, oh, well, he's the shred guy. And I don't think they've ever really given a chance of like really listening to an Impellitteri album to realize it goes well beyond that. And that, you know, what you do, it serves the context of the song. And I think this one is probably the best example of all of them, of you just making those parts really serve the song and not you.
You know what? Thank you, Scott. Thank you for saying that. God, thank you. Because you know what? For years, I've had such an identity crisis with this band. Mm. You know, I mean, they always think it's Chris Impellitteri, the Eagle guitar solo show. I cannot tell you how many times I read comments where he's nothing but an Yngwie clone and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, my God, do you even listen to the band? It's like the band is called Impellitteri. It's not Chris Impellitteri.
Right.
Like when people YouTube us or Google us for the first time, they make the mistake of typing in Chris Impellitteri. So there, yeah, you'll see me maybe playing a clinic in front of 200 people, you know, that work for, you know, a guitar company or whatever, because I just signed up with Marshall, and now I'm doing Charvel and Jackson and Fender. So, you know, I will do that as a favor to the companies, you know. That's not the band. Just type in Impellitteri, right? And that's the band. Then you see it. It's a band. I am nothing more than a quarter member. You know, if you like these records, it's not because of me. I'm only 25% of it. Rob Rock is 25%, you know, James Pulley is equal 25%. And then whether it's Glenn Sobel, you know, Ken Mary was another drummer we had from
for a long time. Yeah.
And, you know, John did this record. So the reality is, you know, I am just an equal member. I mean, if people like my guitar playing, you know, I think that's awesome. I'm flattered and I'm grateful that you like, you know, what I do as a guitarist. Right. But it's a band. Yeah. So if you like this record, don't just sit there and think I did this. It's not me. It's four guys. We did it together.
Yeah. And I think Yngwie is a great example because, you know, you go see Yngwie live and it's the Yngwie show. And, you know, you buy an Yngwie album and there's some songs with vocals, but most of them, it's all about Yngwie and guitar. This is clearly a band. You know, you listen to it and, oh, that's a you know, group of band songs. So like I said, I just overall, I really love the feel of this album. The other thing that was right up before I listened to a note of it, as I looked at the cover of it, and it brought me right back to Answer to the Master. It just has that same kind of cover vibe that Answer did to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Answer to the Master was a huge, huge record for us. Mm. In Japan, I think in the first 5 hours it went on sale, sold over 100,000 copies.
Wow. That's awesome.
I know. We were just like, wow, it was great. You know, if you listen to that record, yes, there's some shredding on it. There's no doubt I shred in places, but other places I don't. It's about the song. The guitar solo, if anything, is just, it's okay, but it's about the great riff and the great song. And, you know, that's one thing people, and I think you caught on very quickly. The people that I get that really paying attention, you know, the biggest thing that I don't hear guitar people talk about is my rhythm playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, people don't realize how influenced I am by guys like Tony Iommi, not from Black Sabbath with Ozzy, but Black Sabbath with the Dio era.
Right. Yeah. So you listen to Face the Enemy and you hear that.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the Mob Rules is a great example. Tony's riffs are amazing. And so before I let any song on an Impellitteri record, it better have a riff or a hook that once you hear it, you love it. It's something that's addictive. That's the first thing I do. I don't write the song around a guitar solo. It's the other way around. It's like when the solo comes up, it's time for me as a guitarist, right, to basically have fun. You know, I play guitar all day long. I'm always shredding. I have a blast with it and just let loose, rip. I love doing that. But it's like I build the cake. The song is the cake. And the cake, I hope, I pray to God, it tastes good. The frosting is the guitar solo. It's the icing on the cake, right?
Down on
know, you listen through it, and I just try to figure out even just some of the different tones and things that you have in there. That, you know, on a shred record, you don't get that. It's kind of, usually if a guy's a shred guy, you get that. Tone is almost through the entire album. It's all about the, you know, the need to have that thing locked in to do it. But you've got so many different tones on here. And for, as me as a guitarist listening to it, I listen to a lot of these things and I'm just like, geez, how is he getting that sound? Or how many tracks are there that do that and stuff? So it's even cooler for me now knowing how much of this was done just live as a band too. That just, that ups the whole ante of it as well for me.
Yeah, well, that was the goal. Like I said, you know, we wanted to make the best record of our career. And like I said, you know, we wanted to make a record. And I apologize, did I do this to you 20 minutes ago, or did I do this to the guy before you? And I apologize. I'm probably going to repeat myself, you know, but the goal of the record.
Yeah.
Did I do that? Did I explain that?
Yep, you absolutely did.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So with that, you know, I mean, I listened to those records, you know, religiously, trying to figure out what was Van Halen using, you know, and, you know, years later, I found out, you know, what he said he was doing and what he really did was a little bit of a contradiction, you know, which a lot of people do. But I realized I listened to a lot of the stuff. And the one thing I realized, first of all, sound and tone, I completely concede to this and I do agree with it. It really comes first from your hands and your technique, right? And it really is. It's true. So, you know, for me, the way I play, you know, as a guitarist, right, with the riffs and all that stuff, I'm always looking for an amp that's really full sounding.
Sure.
So we wanted, like I said, we wanted to play the song live and record this as a live band. So, you know, the first thing I'm looking for is, well, what is the rhythm sound and what's the solo sound? You know, do I have a foot switching rig, which I do. I've got a very elaborate pedal board where I can run 6 or 7 amps at one time.
Nice.
You know, so, or I can kick them in and out. So if I'm going to do a solo, I can change amps, you know, and as long as they're mic'd properly, you know, you might not hear a huge change in tone, but it really, as an application, it's much easier to solo over, right?
Right.
And I'll give you an example by that. If you're a guitarist, you know, a lot of times when you're doing the real big, the chunk stuff, the real heavy, you know, like if you listen to Face the Enemy, it's deep, it's big, it's detuned.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, to get that full sound, you want to use like a Bogner, maybe a Mesa Boogie triple rectifier.
Sure.
But like a triple rectifier, you try to do a guitar solo in that thing, it's horrible. It fights you. It's, you know, I think there's latency in it. You know, you play it and then, you know, the sound comes out after, it's not tracking really quickly. And for me on these solos, I wanted an old Plexi Marshall, like a 1967 head, you know, run through vintage 25-watt speakers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted that kind of tone. So that's really what I was doing on this record. You know, you get the rhythm track you're playing live and you got the, you know, the heavy stuff that's just a great rhythm tone. And then you kick into a great lead tone. You know, and then, of course, what I did, like I said, you know, on the solos, I had to go back and a lot of times just to thicken stuff up. I may have doubled or tripled parts, you know. You know, but the stuff was laid down. A lot of it's first take, believe it or not.
Wow.
And that's why it also sounds like when you're listening to this record, if you close your eyes, I swear to God, I feel like you're on stage with us. You're part of the band. You're playing with me. You know, or you're playing with the other guys. And it has that true feeling. And that I really credit to Greg Reilly, our co-producer and engineer.
Yeah.
He's amazing. He captured this thing live. And we did it at NRG Studios, which is very expensive. You know, it's one of the most popular studios in LA.
Okay.
You know, it's, did I explain that already?
Nope.
Yeah, it's, so we tracked at NRG. It's where Linkin Park did their last record. Same room we did Venom in.
Okay.
Slash did his last record there. Same place. Big, big room. You know, great vintage old Neve console. You know, it's definitely a multi-million dollar complex. It's a great place owned by a producer named Jay Baumgartner.
Okay.
So Caption Us Live, you know, he had the equipment, had the room. It was just fantastic. What a great experience.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think part of, you know, people do miss it, especially if they don't, you know, play or more if they don't engineer or produce too, is that when you're doing like a technique like yours too, I mean, it's really important to get that right tone and not just all by yourself, but I mean, you've been doing this long enough that you can make that nice tone that, you know, slots in with everybody and it sounds effortless. But there's usually a lot of thought behind making that work, because I'm sure that by itself, I'm sure it sounds great, but probably not as good as it sounds with everybody else.
Oh, right, right. Well, you know, that's true. That's true. I mean, you know, listen, making records is an art. There's no doubt about that. It's an art and it's a science.
Yeah.
You have to, I mean, going into a studio, you know, I've become kind of a studio nerd. I love it. I own a studio in my house, major studio, and I love, it's so much fun, you know, because it's like you can start with a canvas and then you can begin to paint and you can create a piece of art. But to do that, you need to know how to use your paintbrush and you know how to use your tools. For us, it's, you know, if I'm, you know, I plug in, you know, usually I'll grab a Strat and I'll, or my old Les Paul, and I'll plug into vintage Marshalls, but then you got to mic it and you got to capture the sound, and that's challenging. You know, you got to, mic placement's critical, right? Because the human hears differently than the microphone does, right? Yeah. So you got to use, and a lot of times you got to use multiple mics. Maybe use an SM57 and an R121 and a 421, you know, all together, you know, running multiple cabinets, doing whatever I have to do to capture that sound. And, you know, then at that point, great, you got the miking thing down, but now do you have the, what mic EQs you're using? For me, I always use vintage Neves, you know, 1081s, 1073s, APIs, all of that stuff, right? So, you know, learning how to get the mic pre just right without using EQ is critical, because when you start doing EQ, now you're changing the original sound,
right?
If that makes sense.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, but mastering this art, that's part of it. And then of course drums, I mean, that's an animal in itself. I mean, Greg, that's one of his that's where he really excels.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, when you put up a drum set and you get it to sound, I mean, by the way, this record's real. It's not some pro-tooled record where bands were sharing files.
Right.
We didn't want to do that. This is, like I said, we went to a studio together as a band live, you know, we played instruments. And so the drums, that's real. You know, I mean, those are like, you know, it took forever to get the drum sounds right and that powerful. You know, otherwise you have to, you know, I mean, people today, they just replace everything with triggers, but we didn't want to do that. We wanted to capture real drums, and it sounds massive.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And you, I mean, you're right. It is a whole art form in and of itself, which a lot of it nowadays is lost because people think it's easy to do, but to really do it and make it sound awesome, it does take a hell of a lot of work to do it.
Oh, you know, absolutely. I mean, listen, we're living in a day and age where sadly people don't have record budgets anymore.
Yeah.
You know, this is one thing where I'm, like I said, I'm so grateful to Japan. You know, we've sold, I don't know what it is, but it's in the millions of records. And so we've been very blessed financially, you know, and I'm aware of that, and I'm extremely grateful and I'm extremely humble for that. And that allows us to go into, you know, a studio and spend a lot of time doing it. You know, I mean, these records are not cheap. Probably spent $150,000 on this record. You know, I mean, time and energy and hotels for the band. And, you know, I mean, it's expensive. And, you know, especially in a day and age where records, what do you sell? You know, I mean, God, AC/DC just opened up. And this is a band that's sold, what, 100 million records. Their recent record just sold, what, 180,000 copies. And it's deemed as a huge success.
Right. Yeah. And
you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's insane.
You're definitely not making money as a band selling records. And I don't care how big you are. It's all about touring. You know, and merch, everybody knows this. This isn't something new.
Right.
So, you know, it's getting rarer that bands are making records like this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, I get, you know, bands that will come over and just ask, you know, hey, can we do some demos here or some tracking? And I'll let them do it in my studio and not charge them, only because I know they're not making their money on the album either. So I just do it to help them out. But you're right. I mean, budgets are tight. So if you're able to do this, and the product you're getting is just insanely great. So, I mean, well, you know, money well spent.
Well, thank you. And, you know, ultimately, but you're also only as good as the people you work with, right?
Yep.
So we've got to, you know, I mean, I'm so proud of the band, guys. I mean, James Pulley is such an underrated, he doesn't get talked about enough. He's one of the greatest bass players I've ever played with. You know, he reminds me of like a modern version or a younger version of Geezer Butler coupled with Geddy Lee and what's his name? Steve Harris. Thank you.
Of Iron.
So basically those three bass players, if you put them together, maybe even John Entwistle, you know, you put those guys together and you kind of end up with James. He's amazing. He's an MIT graduate, you know, great musician. And, you know, he holds the band. I mean, just listen to his bass playing, listen to his fretless bass playing on Face the Enemy. You know, great player. So that, and then of course, Greg Reilly's produced bands like Fear Factory, mixed records for Devil Driver, Overkill. I mean, he's insane. He's just a great engineer. So he knows how to capture the power of a band like us.
Yeah.
You know, we're obnoxiously loud. You know, I run my amps wide open, so that's probably not easy to harness. You know, and he knows how to capture the tone properly.
Yeah, the team you have together, it's just great. And just the band on this one, you know, I think John is just like that missing piece that slotted in here so well for this one. I think just perfect. And I'm a huge Rob Rock fan. So, you know, anytime I see his name on an album, I'm usually always instantly sold. So for me, this was a home run. And like you said, what James puts in here, you know, when I played bass for a long time myself, you're always the unsung guy. But if you don't have that good rhythm section with your bass player and your drummer, you're just, you forget it. You can't even start.
Absolutely. You know, that's, and in this interview, it's been so much fun with you, Scott, because I think you really get this band.
Thanks.
You know, I mean, over the years, you know, I have to, it's kind of like, I feel like a punching bag. I get the, you know, I don't know if the guitar players are jealous or what, but it's Yngwie clone, Yngwie clone. I'm thinking, dude, and listen, and nothing against Yngwie. I love Yngwie. And he absolutely, I guarantee he had some effect on my playing at a point in my career. But so did, you know, like Eddie Van Halen, Randy Rhoads, they were long before him. Uli John Roth, my God, way before Yngwie.
Right.
Had a huge influence on me. Harmonic minor scales, shredding, even, you know, Stratocaster, all those guys. And but when I do listen to the latter, right, the other guy, again, like him a lot. I'm not saying anything negative, but I can't listen to his music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, okay, I get it. You know, you can play like I play. You can do the shredding thing, but where's your song?
Yeah.
And in the early part of his career, I thought he did some great stuff, really good stuff. I'll See the Light Tonight was one I thought, man, what a great song. One of my favorites from him.
Yeah.
You know, but it was, it all became his own solo show. I mean, my God, when I see, you know, I haven't had one of his records or listened to him literally since probably 1986 or 87. It was the last time I ever heard of Yngwie record. Mainly because I didn't want to get accused anymore or have anybody have a valid reason to say, oh, you sound like Yngwie, right?
Right.
Because my shredding, to be honest, comes from my real influence that really got me into speed was Al Daniola and John McLaughlin.
Those
are real guys.
Yeah.
And I don't give enough credit to, and I should, John Sykes was another huge influence on me, you know. So basically, that was where it started for me. You know, and the shredding thing, you know, like I say, you know, it got taken to the point where it got out of hand. You know, if I see a video, like someone showed me a video, I think it was Mike Viscara, our singer of Animetal. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd been in Yngwie's band, and he showed me some video footage of him recently, and I looked at it, and it's great. It's like in Pelletier. He's got a lot of marshals, but so do I. But it's all on his side of the stage, and then the drummer's over in the left-hand corner with the bass player, and the bass player's got like one little cabinet.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's the point where maybe you're going a little too far. You're forgetting that, you know, as a musician, remember, we're communicating with the other musicians. It's sharing this experience. You're using the instrument to communicate with one another, play off one another.
Right.
You know, that's what I love about Dream Theater. One of my favorite bands. I love Dream Theater. Great band. Musically, you know, look, Petrucci's as good as me and Yngwie and all those guys, right?
Right.
If not better. And he's a great talent, but he knows his place.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, no, it does. Everybody in that band, it's the same thing. I mean, John Myung could go and be shred bass player as well, but he knows when to hold it in and when not to. And, you know, everybody in that band is exactly that thing. They know where they should slot in on a song.
Absolutely. So even with Impelitaire, with this new record Venom, yes, you're going to hear a ton of shredding. I actually spent two. What people don't realize, I just spent 3 years developing a brand new picking technique.
Hmm.
And yeah, I'm really excited about it. The guitar solo on Venom is really fast. And it's really, you know, it's very technical. And it's basically one take. And it's interesting because I was watching this flamenco player, you know, doing this thing. And I've seen Van Halen do it, but only when he slides up on one string, you know.
Okay.
And it was an interesting thing. And I started playing around with going, God, I wonder if you could do scales and sequences and string skipping. And at first it was difficult. It wasn't working. It's like, this isn't working. But it had an amazing tone and attack. Really, really articulate and very percussive, which is what I look for. And I started playing with it. And about a week or two in, the penny dropped. And I'm using that from some saying I saw a guitar teacher do on YouTube talk about the penny dropped. And I didn't understand what he meant. Now I get it. You do it enough and all of a sudden by accident, all of a sudden it becomes natural and it starts to work.
Yeah.
And it works over and over again. And it did. And I was like, what is this? Oh my God. And I started playing with this. I've never seen another guitar player do this. And so I started developing this, kept doing it over and over again. And every guitar solo I did on this record is done with that technique.
Wow.
And it's why the guitar solos, and you know, it's funny, I watch occasionally, and by the way, everything on YouTube of me, I don't put that up. It's, we've got fans all over the world that do that. So people put stuff up and they're free to say whatever about me, right? Some people go, oh man, we love him, fast, great guitar player. Other people say he sucks, Yngwie clone, you know, that stuff, right? But it's funny, I've read comments where people go, oh, dude, man, he's really fast, amazing, but his picking technique sucks. That's not the way you should pick. You should only pick from your wrist. And I started laughing. I thought about that. And I said, listen, in essence, and I had Al DeMille has talked about that too, and he's very opinionated about you should only pick with your wrist, right? Very loose form. And I agree to a degree. I agree to a degree, right? Hmm. Here's where I disagree. I'm looking for attack, percussiveness, right?
Yeah.
And the way I solo, I want to be able to solo on an acoustic guitar the same way I can solo on electric. And that's why a lot of times I can plug directly into a Marshall and just do what I do without effects, right? So a lot of times where I don't think you should use forearm, but there are times where I've developed techniques where the forearm is critical because it's giving you a lot more attack and pressure on that stroke,
right?
Whether it's down, up, down, up, down, whatever you're doing, it gives you that attack. And so when you listen to what I'm doing, the first thing I'm looking for is, does it sound like literally you have drumsticks in your hand? And if I'm going, is it sound like you're taking sticks literally on a wood table and going, which means that I know you're hearing the pick, the articulation.
Yeah.
So anyways, and I apologize. I probably went way off on where I was going with this originally, but you know.
Oh, no, I love this stuff. I can geek out on guitar stuff any day. Now, when you do this, when you switch from rhythm and into that picking technique, now, does that require a different grip on the pick? You're using a different part of the pick? Or is it just, or do you don't even realize that you're doing a change up?
No. I feel it. I definitely feel it. Because, you know, a lot of times, most of my playing for years, I always mute everything. And I got that from DeMiola.
Mm-hmm.
But on this, you really can't mute. It's hard. So what I have to do is basically I have to anchor a little bit below my elbow, right? On the body of the guitar, I have to really push down.
Okay.
So it's locked. So my forearm doesn't, you know, because you have to have control. It's kind of like some guitars. Neil Sean does it really well. Michelangelo Badio does it well, where you anchor, you know, you put your finger on the body while you're picking, you anchor it.
Right.
So what it does is it keeps you able to lock in. And so you do your alternate picking and you're able to kind of control, you know, where your fingers are at all times. So if you can't do that, what I had to do is I had to find an area below my elbow where I could lock on the body, where then I could kind of find the spacing as I'm doing this. And so that was a little bit challenging at first, but it seems to be working really well. It's just, and I'm really stoked about it too, because, you know, when you come on, you stumble onto something and you can hear it. I mean, I hear it just listening back in the record now, especially when you hear the Venom solo. I'm like, my God, listen to the attack on that thing. You know, it's stupidly fast as far as a solo, but everything is really clear and articulate.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's no effects. We're not using reverb and delays and all that stuff. I mean, it's like as if I could literally shut the amp off and just play it. And you just hear the guitar going.
I like it. I like the fact that too, that it kind of does give me that old Van Halen vibe too, where it would get up to that solo and it would almost be like a different technique you'd use in the solo, and it would jump out. You clearly knew this was a solo, and it, I don't know, that's, in my mind, that's kind of what it reminds me of when I listen to these.
Well, that's what you're hearing. And, you know, again, of course, I used, you know, to say Van Halen, this is where I probably plagiarizing or copying them. You know, again, a lot of that sound you're hearing is a 1967 Marshall Plexi.
Yeah.
And hence, what did Van Halen do on the first record with Eruption and all that? 67 Plexi Marshall, you know?
Right.
So yeah, a lot of that is that tone.
Any plans at all for any kind of touring stuff coming up at any time?
Yeah. We start, always start in Japan, naturally. We're doing May 28th, we're playing in Tokyo. We're playing On Air East Arena. We then go to Osaka. We play Quattro. That's a different venue. And then we do Hiroshima. I think we do another Quattro venue there. And then yesterday morning, the owner of Frontiers, our new label, Frontiers basically offered us to be one of the top billing bands. They're going to do a major rock festival in Germany on October 3rd and October 4th. So I think we're going to do that as well. So it should be really fun. You know, and of course, we're talking with agents and promoters now for America and Europe. Great. To do a full-blown tour.
I would love, you know, to hear this stuff live. And obviously, you know, you recorded it live, so I don't have to always ask the usual question of, like, how do you feel about playing this stuff live? This should just kind of be like this just ups the fun factor for it more than anything else, and nothing really technical for you to do on it. So, yeah, I look forward to hearing it live.
Yeah. Well, like I say, you know, hearing the record, you guys are pretty much, I mean, anybody who listens to this record, just close your eyes. You're literally on the stage with us playing. And you get that feeling, that energy. So you can kind of sense what we're going to sound like live anyways.
Yeah. Like I said, it's just definitely almost a really fun live record. It's one of these ones you just want to put in the car, crank up, and just really enjoy it.
Hey, I'm sorry. Can you hold on one second?
Yeah.
Sorry. One second. Sorry, it's my cartage company for my Marshalls.
So while Chris is talking to his cartage company about trucking his arsenal of Marshalls around, why don't we take this opportunity to play a little bit of Impala Terry? And how about we step one album back to the album that came out before this one? It's called The Wicked Maiden. Also had Rob Rock on vocals. And this is the title track, Wicked Maiden.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Freaking out. My iPad went black. I'm like, I can't see. So, yeah.
No. It's one of these ones. It's definitely, it passes the test, I think, at every level. And it is great. And to me, I just don't understand either why people can't get over the whole shred thing at all. It's definitely not anything like that at all. So hopefully we can convince people that it's more than that.
Well, you know, thank you. I appreciate that. I hope so, but we'll see.
So as far as anybody that wants to know about what's going on with Impala Terry, what's the best places to either keep track of you online or get a hold of you?
You know what? The funny thing is we've always been a people band, and I know it's going to sound lame, but we don't even have websites. I mean, I have a Facebook page. I have to turn into a band page soon, I'm sure. But, you know, I mean, people just can simply Facebook us. You know, when I say a people's band, we never want to be one of those bands where we're always self-promoting ourselves. Mm-hmm. I know it's important, but we didn't want to do that. We want people to listen to us and say either, man, I love this band, or they suck, and express your opinion about us. If you like us and support us, great. If you hate us, express your opinion. That's okay too. Mm-hmm. You know, that way this band builds based on, do people truly like us or not?
That's
really
nice.
Rare. And so that's why we do it this way.
Yeah, that's good. And of course I have to ask the question, and I know everyone I ever ask this to, they really hate it because it's like having a favorite child, but what is your favorite track off the new album? Do you have one?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, as a guitar player, I can tell you, like, I love Venom.
Yeah.
You know, I love the energy. But, you know, it's funny. But then I'll listen to a song and I love Empire of Lies.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, but let me turn this on you, because, you know, it's funny. We are shooting 5 music videos tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And I'm asking everybody this. And again, if you don't like the record, it's okay. But if you do, truly, what are your favorite songs? And I don't expect you to remember the titles, because even I can't remember half the titles. But if you like him, is there any top 3 or 4 songs that you really seem to like?
Oh, absolutely. Nightmare is probably my top pick off of the album.
Awesome. Okay.
Followed by Venom, followed by Face the Enemy, and then it's Rise and Holding On. Those are like my favorites.
So Face the Enemy, mm-hmm. Venom. Yep. Sorry, I'm writing this down because I'm doing this with everybody.
Yeah. Nightmare is number 1.
Okay.
Then Venom. Then Face the Enemy is number 3. Holding On is number four, and Rise would be number five.
That's awesome. Well, I can tell you, we're, as long as we have time, we're committed. We're definitely doing Venom. We are doing Face the Enemy, definitely. And Nightmare was actually recently we added that.
Yeah.
And I think we're doing We Own the Night and Empire of Lies. I think nice. That's the other two.
Yeah.
But definitely Nightmare, Face the Enemy, and Venom. That's great because we've heard that a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but Nightmare, it just it sticks with you. And it's got this hook that you walk away and it's stuck in your head for hours. So that's, I just really love that song.
Oh, that's great, man. Well, listen, Scott, I really appreciate you sharing that with me because at least I can, you know, I'm getting more of a consensus now. You know, it's hard. You know how it is. You're an artist. You write something, you record it, and you think it's the greatest thing. And it won't be for like until a year or two later after you've done other stuff. You go back and you go, oh, that sucked. What was I thinking?
Yep.
and believe me, I've done that. I've done that a lot. So on this record, you know, I'm trying to be cautious. I'm trying not to say, okay, because I love this song, it's the greatest thing. It might not be. It might be horrible a year from now.
Right.
So I'm asking everybody else, is there something that you like? And, you know, we start hearing people repeat themselves, like, we like this song, and they keep saying that particular song. Then you kind of guess, well, we must be onto something here.
Yeah, and that's a good way to do it. And again, it goes back to what you just said a few minutes ago, too, about getting input from the people, let the people get the word out for you guys and stuff. So it's all the same page. I like that.
Yeah, well, cool.
All right, Chris, I'll tell you, it's been a blast talking to you. I'm glad we finally got to talk. And hopefully if you get, you know, a North American tour put together, you got some dates around Boston, because I definitely would love to come out and hear this stuff live.
Oh, Scott, thank you. And dude, Facebook me. Let's stay in touch. I'd love to communicate with you. It's really fun talking with you. Seriously.
Awesome. Will do.
Okay.
All right, Chris.
Have a good one.
You too, man.
Hey, rockers. This is Rob Rock, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
So I figured the best way to lead us into the Rob Rock portion of the show was to take a cut off of one of my favorite Rob Rock albums. That is 2007's Garden of Chaos. A lot of great players on that one. And obviously great songs like the one you just heard right there, Metal Breed. So with your appetites whetted for some more Rob Rock, I give you Rob Rock. All right, metalheads. Last you heard from Chris Impellitteri about the great new Impellitteri release, Venom. But I have got extra icing on the cake, a guy I've been waiting to talk to for a long time, and that is vocalist Rob Rock. How are we doing today, Rob?
Doing good, Scott, and good, great to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. I have to say that, you know, before we dive right into Impellitteri, that even after all this time, I just can't get enough of that Garden of Chaos release that you put out. I literally keep that in my car at all times.
Awesome, awesome. Glad to hear get it, man.
Yeah, you know, it's odd, you know, being in the U.S. and I talk to people about Rob Rock and they go, you mean Bob Rock? I'm like, no, Rob Rock. And, you know, so many people in the U.S. have no idea who you are. But then, you know, folks in Europe, they're so used to you being on all kinds of releases. You know, like when I talked to Timo Toki a few years ago about the Land of the New Hope release, and he was really, you know, excited that he was a guy from the U.S. that was so enthused about Rob Rock, you guys doing vocals for it and stuff. So it's kind of an odd thing, and but it's great. Like I said, great to finally be able to talk to you.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of time in Europe and Japan. So
you have. Yeah. It's almost like with Russell Allen, too, right? I mean, everyone in Europe knows who Russell Allen is.
Yeah.
And then in the U.S., they're like, Russell who?
Yeah, it's a funny thing.
Yeah, well, but hey, it's good for you, right? I mean, you are definitely one of those premier voices of this kind of metal. I'm glad that you're so well-recognized in Europe.
Well, thank you.
So, of course, the main reason I'm talking to you today is, once again, another great release from Impellitteri, the new release Venom. And as I talked to Chris, just right out of the gate, title track Venom right in there, was like, oh my god, I knew this was going to be such a great album. But on top of that, when I first got the press release about it and I saw your name, I was like, oh yes, it's, you know, I love whenever you're on an album, and I always consider you to be the classic vocalist for Impellitteri. So to have a great release like this and have your voice on it is just a huge bonus for me.
Wow, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Hopefully I'm not pumping your ego up too much, right?
Nah, we leave that at home.
So, obviously, a really impressive release. And, you know, Chris talked a lot about how you guys got together and did all this. And, you know, as far as for you, did you find this to be a challenge? Did this feel more like putting an old pair of shoes? Or, you know, how did this whole album feel to you?
This felt like really natural. It wasn't forced at all. It was actually probably the easiest one we've done, I think.
Mm.
It's, you know, Chris called and said, yeah, let's do another record. I said, cool. And he just said, yeah, you know, just do what you do, man, and let's just do what we do and not fret. You know, a lot of times we get into situations where we're worried about every single note or everything that goes on, and this time we just kind of had our own self-confidence and said, let's just do what we're going to do,
yeah,
and so be it, you know. And that's all, everyone put in their own, you know, style, their own pulse, their own input, and it came out great.
Yeah, and one of the other things I mentioned to him, too, is the fact that there's just so many different almost eras of metal that are represented throughout this with the different textures and all that. It's definitely not this, you know, from track 1 to track 10, you get the same. There's all kinds of different things. If you really liked 80s-type metal, there's songs on there for you. If there's stuff that were the 2000s you were really into, there's stuff that's on there for you. And even stuff that's from, you know, 2014, there's styles on there like that. And I think that must have come out of you guys just going in there and just doing whatever it is felt natural.
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, we first got together when we were, not the first time we got together, but one of the major influences on the album was when we were touring. Well, we were rehearsing the tour Korea, and then a big typhoon came through and wiped out the festival site. So we're sitting in the rehearsal in Los Angeles, and we said, okay, now what? They said, well, my plane don't leave for 2 days. You know, so Chris said, well, let me play you stuff I got for the new album. So we started jamming on it in the room, rehearsal room, and I think that gave us all a really good bonding and a really good, you know, gelling for a live feel for these songs before we even finish writing them, you know?
Yeah.
It's turned out really good that way.
And yeah.
That, you know, that usually doesn't happen, so I think maybe that had some good influence on it.
Oh, maybe. I have to say, yeah, it has that really kind of live, spontaneous vibe to a lot of the songs as well, so maybe that's part of what came out of that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
So, you know, as far as lyric writing, now, are you more or less the, you know, as you're listening to what guys are doing and stuff, you start to kind of get melodies, or does the choruses pop in your heads or work from that, or do you come at it from any kind of direction at any given time?
Oh, well, usually, you know, I say, Chris, don't tell me what you have in mind for melodies. Let me come up with stuff. And for each song, I'll come up with melodies, one or two different type melodies, and play it back to him or sing it back to him. And he'll say, oh, yeah, that's great. And then I never even heard what he had for the original. And then there's other times where he says, well, you know, I had this in mind and it really stuck with me. Try this. And I'll say, oh, yeah, that's better than what I had. And then I'll start writing from there.
Hmm.
But, we usually just start with a working title and then I'll take it from there. And a lot of times that working title gets changed. But sometimes I actually can spin off of that title and go and take it from there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really unique, too, how you're having to sing against Chris's playing. I think a lot of vocalists, they would really be keying in a lot on and maybe even being confused by what he's doing. But it seems like you make it seem very effortless, and the way that you do those melody lines and your vocals over Chris, if you really listen, it really brings out his rhythm playing abilities in each song. And I think not everybody could do that.
Yeah, I think maybe it's experience from writing so much, but I think it's a lot of times when I'm coming up with melodies, I'm bouncing off the music, but I add another layer of frustration to my writing. is the melody has to stand on its own. I have to go away the next day and be able to sing it apart from the music. And I know if it sticks in my head, or if it's solid melody without the music, I know I'm on to something.
Yeah.
So if you have a melody that's working without the music and then you put it on the music, it just makes it twice as effective and twice as powerful, because the rhythm itself is speaking. And when I'm speaking vocally and harmonically over that, that's how I think the magic's starting to happen with the songwriting. And that makes us more of just a shredder band. It makes us a songwriting band, you know?
Yeah. That's one thing I really like about this particular release is I think more than any of the other ones that Impellitteri has put out, I think this is the one that I think speaks the most to, this isn't just a shredding band, that there's just this really killer songwriting in there. I mean, you take something like Nightmare and the groove that's in Nightmare, that's not a shredding band. That's a great song right there.
Yeah, I love Nightmare. That, like you said, that's a whole new sound in there, you know, and yet it's still an Impellitteri sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Somehow it came out like that, so.
I mean, obviously, you know, Venom, I mean, it kicks in and you're like, oh, damn, you're hearing these great licks and runs and stuff like that, but not every song is like that. And even that one there, it still just has this great overall song feel where as soon as the lyrics kick in and stuff, you don't really focus in on how fast he's playing or anything else. You just focus in on this really great song. You start, oh, the interaction with the rhythm section and everything else. And, you know, that's one thing I really am always impressed with the way you guys put this stuff together, is that a lot of people, I think, would take all the talent that's always in that band and just put it in just a really bad place, but you guys seem to know how to slot everything in really nice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're both very song-minded, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I know you are. I mean, everything that that I follow you on, I don't think you've ever put out anything that I haven't liked, but I know a lot of people, they think of Chris and they go, oh, he's just that shredding guy, but I'm really happy that this album is one of those ones I can put on to go, really listen to what's going on with this. And maybe make them go back and listen to some of the other stuff that you guys did to go, wow, there's more to this band than I really thought there was.
Yeah, that would be great. People do grab the album and love it and then just go back in time a little bit and pick up some other works.
Yeah. I know that Chris was really looking forward to doing this stuff live. That's go the same for you as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. We just shot some videos in Los Angeles last week, and playing them live there on that soundstage was really fun. You know, I'm like, oh, these are going to kill live. They fit very well for the live situation.
Awesome. Yeah, I know when I talked to Chris, you guys hadn't really nailed down exactly what you were going to do for vids yet, so he was asking, what I thought were standout tracks and stuff, and I guess he'd been polling everybody all day to narrow down a list of songs, so I thought that was kind of a cool way of going about seeing, what you guys wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you like doing the videos? I know I talk to people and half the people are like, oh God, I can't stand doing videos. And like when I talked to Red Beach a few weeks ago, he's like, oh, I used to hate doing videos. I absolutely hate it. And then other people are like, oh no, they're a blast. It takes a little bit of time, but yeah, it breaks up the monotony or whatever. And so what about you?
Well, I like doing it for the 3 minutes long. I got to tell you, the rest of the day, it's a long day. It's hard work. It's not real easy. And I think what makes it hard is the waiting, in between and different takes and stuff like that. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, I would rather not do anything else. So
right.
It's like, spend all day doing this. I'd rather do that,
Right. Another thing I think people don't realize either is that, I mean, how long that you've been associated with Chris. I mean, basically it's been since the start of your singing career, correct?
Yeah. We actually were in a cover band. Well, I had a band back east called Vice. I was playing 6-7 nights a week, and Chris was in that for about a year. And then he went out to L.A., and a few months later, I got a call for the Mars Project driver to audition. And I flew out to audition and got the gig, so I ended up moving out to L.A. after that. Mars, it was like, Chris was like, man, I need someone to sing these songs, for a demo. And that's when we did the Black EP back in, I think it was 80, summer of 86 or 87.
Yeah.
End of 86, somewhere around there. So yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah. I really like that about you guys too, that it's, you know, a team that's worked together for so long, as opposed to a lot of times in the industry, right? You see people that over time they drift apart, or they're like slamming each other or whatever else. And it's pretty cool. Even he's had other singers come in, but then you've come back again and stuff. And I think that speaks a lot to that songwriting partnership you guys have.
Yeah. You know, even back in the clubs when Chris joined my band Vice, there was magic going on, man.
Mm.
And we felt it, we knew it. And you know, I had such a big, good thing going over there, you know, owning the truck and the lights and playing every night. And Chris was like, no, we got to go to LA, go to LA. And he just got up and went one day. and I soon followed after, but I guess I needed a big enough reason to get up to leave something that I had built for so many years to go out to LA.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mars Project Driver was the reason. So, and that's what got me out to LA. So.
Yeah, it is, you know, I think people that haven't done it, they don't sometimes realize about that chemistry, that kind of magic that happens. And I know I had a songwriting partner for a long time. Yeah, any time that we'd sit down and jam, it was just absolutely effortless. We could come up with a couple songs within a few hours. We didn't even have to think about it. And I've never had that with anybody else I've ever worked with since. And so, you know, I understand when you talk about that stuff, but I don't think a lot of people don't have that sense of, I mean, it doesn't happen with everybody.
No, you're dealing with egos, you're dealing with personalities, you're dealing with players, you know, playing.
Yeah.
You know, Chris always wanted to make a statement as a shredding guitar player. And which he's done in, you know, the early days. I know we were super focused on that. And then with every album, we've always agreed that it comes to, really, for longevity, it comes down to the song.
Oh, yeah.
If the songs can stand the test of time, you'll still be around. And what is it, 25, 30 years later, we're still putting out records. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and people are obviously, they're buying them and loving them, which is great as well.
Yeah, and this time we're getting released worldwide at the same time, you know, so that's another different factor about this record. We got Frontiers with us now, and it's just getting released everywhere at once, where before it would come out in Japan, and later in Europe, and then sometimes it'll come out in the U.S., sometimes it won't, you know, so
right.
This time it's all at once. So I'm really looking forward to the reaction to that.
Yeah, because that's going to be like just a crazy way to do releases. I know I'd see something come up and be like, oh, great, and be like, oh, wait a minute, it's only where? I have to pay how much for it and stuff? I think it's great that it's just one big push from the label to get it out and all over the world in one shot.
Yeah, that should be good. I mean, it's not, you know, it's already out in Japan, and those import prices will kill you, you know?
Oh, yeah, I know. And I am a physical media whore, so I'm guilty of... Somebody has to keep buying physical CDs, so I guess it might as well be me, right?
I hear you. Yeah, I don't understand it any other way. I got to have that CD in my hand.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You got to see the artwork. You got to read the liner notes, and this...
Yeah.
You know, it's the experience. So, you know, obviously you're always been a very busy vocalist, very in demand. So what else do you have going on as far as, you know, other places I'm going to see you pop up in the next few months?
Well, right now it's all in Pelletieri.
Oh, okay.
All the time. I don't have anything on the agenda right now.
Wow.
See, last couple of years I did the Driver Countdown CD. I did Timo Tolki's Avalon.
Hmm.
And now, you know, we just did it. Venom album. So right now I'm just on that, and I plan on putting all my effort into it as long as we can, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good way to do it. It's gonna save you a bunch of trips to Europe, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. So of course I always have to ask the question, everyone hates it, for you, what's your favorite track on the album?
Oh man,
see, everyone hates this question.
Depends. I kind of go through phases.
Yep.
Yeah, I think my first favorite, I think, was We Own the Night.
Hmm.
You know, as I recorded that, I really felt like I performed it in a special way. And that came off great. And then we recorded Empire of Lies, and then I loved that one. And then Nightmare came up, and I did a lot of production on the vocals, a lot of backing stuff, and a lot of doubling of lines and stuff. And then working on that so hard, I was like, oh, no, no, I'm into Nightmare. You know, so it's really tough. I mean, I've always loved Venom and Domino Theory as well, you know. And Jehovah, that song to me is kind of like a almost a classical metal type track, and I really like that one.
Yeah,
it is. A lot of good stuff.
Yeah, with you guys really focusing on all this and stuff, have you started thinking about any other writing? You guys been tossing around ideas, or are you just pretty much just trying to firm up a good live set to take out?
Yeah, right now we're focusing on the touring set right now. We just finished the videos. That, you know, those will start leaking out, and then we're getting prepared right now for the Japan tour in May. So right now it's just a matter of we're actually trying to decide what other songs to do besides a lot from the new album. And I don't even know what songs from the new album yet, but
yeah.
I'm sure we'll probably do 5 or 6 from the new album and then start picking out the other ones that we want to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be tough because, especially for Japan, I mean, they know your catalog and you've got a huge catalog of stuff. So that's got to be just an insanely difficult task to pull that together.
Yeah, it is. You know, and the stuff's not easy to sing. So it's like, I also have to consider the pace of the set and what songs and what order and stuff like that. And
that's right.
There's a lot that goes into a live set, you know.
Yeah, but at least when I listen back to the catalog and stuff, the one thing I don't come away with is that you look back at a song that comes up on the set list and go, God, I wish I hadn't sung it in that key. It seems like you've always been like in a really comfortable key place with everything you do. So that, you know, over all these years, it just seems like your voice is 100% able to deliver no matter what.
Yeah, well, thank you. Like I said, I've wrote songs with a lot of great guitar players, and usually I'm trying to write with what they have going on, you know, so I'm very flexible in that case. But
yeah.
Like when I was doing the Timo Tolkki stuff, when I first heard it, I said, oh my God, that stuff is high, man. And my wife says, oh, don't chicken out. You know, you can do it. And I'm like, all right. So I just pulled up my pants and said, all right, I got to kick this thing. And, you know, it's tough, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't tough. Once it went down, I'm like, oh yeah, I could do that.
Yeah.
So it's fun. And that was exciting. And then when the Impel Terry album came up and we started writing for this, man, it's just a lot of good ballsy melodies going on and a lot of harmony stuff I put in there and stuff, because I'm a big Boston Sticks freak.
There you go.
When I was coming up, so I just love harmony and I love doubling and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing too now in metal is over the last maybe 3 or 4 years, I think a lot of people have gone back, you know, they've spent all this time listening to all this really down-tuned, really cookie vocals, and I think that their brain is just telling them there's something missing here, and they're seeming to come back around looking for songs that have harmony and melody and all of that back in the songs again. And so something like this album is definitely one of those ones that there's something for everybody on this disc.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm glad that's the way it's happening. Maybe the time is right, like you said. Maybe the time is now for it to explode because of that, because it's going back to hooks, you know?
I definitely think so. Just today I was listening to the new Temple of Rock album that Michael Schenker put out, and it's the same thing. I mean, that thing is right from the first song, just the hooks and the melodies that are in there. It's like, this is just an insanely great album. It just grabs you. And I think that's what a lot of people are going back to needing to have again, as opposed to, I mean, come on, if you have an album that's 12 songs of nothing but cookie vocals, I think when you're all done, you probably can't remember what you just listened to. But something like this, you walk away and you're like 2 hours later going, God damn, that song's still stuck in my head. And I think that's what music needs.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Awesome. As I said, I'm super glad I was able to get a hold of you. I'm glad we got a stable connection today as well. Definitely when they sent out the press release and I saw that you were back on the album, I was psyched about that. But then also when they said, hey, you know, if you want, we can hook up an interview with Rob as well. I was, sign me up. I would love to get him on. I know that you've got a huge fan base in Europe that would love to hear from you. And hopefully we can spread the word about you and spread the word about Impel Terry. I really appreciate you taking the time today to talk to us on Focus on Metal.
All right. Well, thank you, Scott. I really appreciate putting me on your show, you know?
And hopefully if tour plans expand for the U.S. and you come around the Boston area, that me and my co-host will come by and catch some live Impel Terry.
All right. That'd be great.
Awesome, Rob. All right.
All right, Scott.
Have a good rest of the day, my friend.
Okay. Thank you. You too.
Okay.
All righty. Bye.
So that will be a wrap on our first Focus on Metal band doubleheader. I'd like to thank our guests, Chris Impel Terry and Rob Rock, and also urge you to hook up with those guys on Facebook. Let them know you heard about them here on Focus on Metal and throw your support behind a great band and some great artists. Don't know how often a chance like this band doubleheader comes up. This just happened to be something that just fell into place with talking with Chris 1 week and talking with Rob within the next week. I know that initially I had some whole other vision for the Impalitary episode, but I kind of like how this one came out. Hope you guys did too. And of course, it goes without saying, go out and pick yourself up a copy of the brand new Impalitary album, Venom. And while you're at it, you might as well throw down your metal dollars for the brand new Kiske Somerville release, City of Heroes, as well. So that is a wrap for this week on Focus on Metal. As I always say, keep up with us at focusonmetal.net. All the links for all the other sites are up there, as well as all the episodes, the whole episode guide, all that deal is there. And also, while you're up there, scroll down the page. You'll see there's some ads there for Michelangelo Badio's brand new one, as well as John Corabi's Unplugged album, both on Rat Pack. If you click either one of those banner ads, that'll get you right over to Rat Pack Records. Get yourself a copy of either one of those great releases. Also, you can head up to focusonmetal.blogspot.com. That's where we keep all of our reviews, as well as all the metal news that gets funneled through us. You can also reach out to us on Facebook, and Richie is thankfully taking care of the Facebook page now. I really appreciate the hell out of him taking that one over from me. Yeah, I'm up there occasionally, but for the most part, Richie has been taking care of all the Facebook stuff now for about the past month. But you can also follow us on Twitter, and I've been maintaining the old Twitter feed. So with that, for myself, for Richie, for everybody else here on staff at Focus on Metal, have yourselves a great metal week. And until we talk to you again next week, remember,
Focus on Metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.